Robins on the Wire, a Bristol Post podcast with Michelle Owen and Bristol City reporter Gregor McGregor.
Welcome along to Robins on the Wire with myself, Michelle Owen, and Gregor McGregor. There's only one place to start today, and that is the 5-5 draw against Hull, which we will come on to shortly. Also today, we'll talk about the future of Bobby Reid. We'll be discussing Lloyd Kelly and Zach Viner. We'll hear from Jamie McAllister ahead of the Forest game at the weekend. And also, we'll be hearing from club legend Lewis Carey. But first, 5-5. It's like a cricket score or something, Gregor. We saw the very best and the very worst of Bristol City on Saturday afternoon, didn't we?
Yeah, in the press conference afterwards, we called it sort of like basketball. Lee Johnson agreed. It was sort of like, we have a go, you have a go. And yeah, I mean, if you're the neutral, then it was a terrific game. But I did feel a bit sorry for the fans around me, because I could hear some of them just literally saying, no, 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 as Hull obviously kept going forward and kept getting those goals.
At 3-1 and at 4-2, you're thinking, right, we're going to finish the day a point outside the playoff position again. It's back on. Michelle and Gregor were wrong by saying it was only 1% chance of making the playoffs. And then come the 90th minute, fans are probably feeling relieved to leave Ashton Gate with a draw after Joe Bryan's injury time equaliser.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, isn't it? Because it looks like they're going to be so close, but yeah, not quite do it. And there have been two or three games, haven't they, like this, like the Sunderland one, the Leeds one away, where if they could have just held out for a bit longer, just kept the opposition out, then they might have got a few extra points.
There'd be 6 points further up the table,
yeah,
at least.
Would make all the difference, wouldn't it? So work to do, for certain, work to do.
Yeah, but that is going to cost them. If we look back at that game, where do we apportion some of the blame? And a lot of people going in on Frank Fielding. Okay, he had no goal against him, and maybe he should have made some better saves, but, you know, it's a team effort, isn't it?
Yeah, was talking to Jamie McAllister in the press conference today, and he was saying about how the guys had a very honest video review session on Monday. They do that every week, though. So, yeah, they will have analysed the game themselves. And the players are their harshest critics. They really are. They'll look at the stuff. And I speak to a lot of them, and I know from what they say that they're an honest bunch. And the coaching staff have said this as well. They'll have held their hands up. And we spoke to Frank Fielding today, and I know that he will have felt bad about maybe a couple of the goals. I'm not too sure if they were really his mistake. I think maybe he could have done a little bit better on the free kick, Harry Wilson's free kick, which was still excellent.
It's near post, you know, which, yeah, the goalkeeper should never be beaten there, but it does happen.
Yeah, it does happen. But I do think a lot of the other ones were sort of 50-50, and I don't think many goalkeepers would have got them. So if that one for the Wilson free kick was a mistake, I do think Frank is sort of in credit, because he's made some incredible saves, like he did last season. He has done again this season. And I still rate him very highly.
But what about his distribution? Because that is something that is constantly questioned. And again, apparently it was off on Saturday.
His distribution, yeah. Of course, no goalkeeper gets every pass right. You'd have to look at the percentages across the league as to where he stands there. But one thing I would point out is that the third goal, I've said this a couple of times, was one of the goals of the season for Bristol City.
From back to front, wasn't it?
Exactly. He gets the ball on pretty much his own goal line. He very coolly rolls it forward to Pack. Pack turns brilliantly on the half turn with the ball. He feeds Smith. It goes out wide to Bobby Reid. Bobby Reid crosses it in. Jeju is there to guide the ball home. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant move. Lovely move. And I know that that's something that they've been working on the training pitch. Marlon Pack said that to me after the game. So yeah, I know Lee Johnson and Jamie McAllister and Dean Holden will have been really pleased to see that one come to fruition, but obviously there's work to do at making sure that they can hold out at the other end.
Well, that's Bristol City at their best, but Bristol City at their worst. Some of those defensive errors, almost comical.
Yeah, and as I sort of said, Lee Johnson after the game sort of bemoaned a lack of leaders in the squad. He was saying about three different types of leaders that there are, and he's looking for specific qualities. And he was saying he doesn't want to see mediocrity from his team, but maybe a few times regarding the defensive side of the game, we have seen that this season, and maybe that's something that they need to improve on. I said to Jamie McAllister today, going forward, City have got one of the best records in the league. I think they're sort of like sixth best attack currently.
And that proves, really, doesn't it, that they could have challenged if they'd been more shored up defensively. These three types of leader, what does he mean by that?
Well, obviously, he referenced Roy Keane, who I believe was in the stands. He said that himself, actually. And actually, there were a few interesting people in the stands, actually.
Maybe
a good interjection. Lee Carsley sat behind me, and he works for the FA now. I believe he was probably watching Jared Bowen and Harry Wilson.
Both
at Hull. But obviously, maybe keeping an eye on the likes of Lloyd Kelly, although he didn't come on, unfortunately. And also, I believe Brian McDermott, I think I might have seen him, I believe he's a scout for Arsenal these days.
But
Lee was citing Roy Keane as the kind of sort of player he wants in his team who just isn't going to accept defeat at any point. And he's spoken recently about clutch moments, which I had to Google. I didn't know what that meant.
What, clutches in your car?
No, I think it sort of comes from American sports and refers to basically the key points in the game when you're under pressure, being able to perform at the vital the vital pointer.
Why not just say that? Why ever complicate it?
Well, okay. That's another point. I do know what he means there. Obviously, they need to improve on that side. I just feel like there's a little bit to go in terms of solidity to the side.
But who are the leaders then? Because you think off the top of your head, okay, a leader is Aidan Flint, but if he's not delivering on the pitch, which he hasn't been so much, you know... Do you start questioning his leadership? Marlon Pack, is he a leader?
I was watching Marlon closely on Saturday and I thought it was excellent. He was barking the orders and he was telling players what to do.
And barks orders, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I mean...
Or is it more out of frustration?
I think it's more out of frustration. You see, I was watching that final goal go in and you look at Flinty's reaction and, yeah, he just explodes. But that needs to be channeled sometimes. It's about telling people where to be, not accepting any mediocrity in terms of positioning, passing, giving the ball away, these kind of things.
Well, obviously, we don't have the ear to the ground on the pitch. And I would love to know what players say to each other during the game, you know, if we could be that close and hear it. But it does seem that Marlon Pack is someone that's constantly given instructions.
Certainly, I know I was asking Jamie McAllister about what they've been working on defensively. And I know that one of the things that arose from the video analysis meeting is communication. And that's something
I always thought Baker and Flint communicated quite well then.
I think maybe across the whole team. And they've certainly had a big session on improving their communicating, pulling people into place, making sure that everybody's aligned. And correctly positioned, and more than that, I'm sure. But that's one area that they've been trying to improve this week.
But it's a mental thing as well, isn't it? You know, when you're 3-1 up, you're 4-2 up, when you're leading Sunderland 3-0, when you're up against Leeds 2-0, and you're throwing... It's the only way to put it, because sometimes when you go to a manager and say, oh, did you throw that lead away? They'll get very defensive about it in post-match conferences and interviews.
Yep.
But they have. They've done it... Time and
absolutely
time again.
Absolutely, and Lee mentioned the leadership, and I did ask him after the game and said, listen, Lee, why, if you haven't got these leaders, then is that because the balance of the team isn't right or because you haven't recruited enough? And unfortunately, he wasn't willing to answer that question for whatever reason. But he answered other stuff, so it's not a big deal. And I'm sure that he will be hell-bent, knowing Lee, and what a stickler for detail that he is. And also, he was seething. You could see this. He was seething after the match.
Didn't let the players out of the dressing room until 5:40.
It was really late. This was probably part of it, actually. This was really late when he came up afterwards, so a good hour. So he was obviously talking to them for a long time. I have another slight theory as well. I don't know how true this is, but somebody told me that maybe Steve Lansdowne was very angry after the game. I'm not sure how reliable that is, but it might explain why he might have been in a bad mood and then was maybe a little bit off in the press conference. But these things happen, you know. And I think it's actually... being a bad loser in football, in my opinion, marks you out as a winner. Unfortunately, you need that. You need people who just refuse. And this goes back to what he was saying about Roy Keane. You need people who just will not accept losing.
But Nigel Adkins is the Hull manager and he went through that roller coaster as well with his team. What was he like after?
Yeah, he was very complimentary about Bristol City. And it was funny, actually. He said that basically wants Hull to be in Bristol City's position next year. And that's a real compliment, isn't it, to the Robin, saying we want to be where they are. And also, there's a wider point here, that perceptions of Bristol City and Lee Johnson outside the club are very, very high. I know there's been a lot of fans moaning about this, and some fans see this as a real missed opportunity this season, which it is. But at the same time, I think people see the bigger picture and that there has been progress. That has certainly been the case outside the club, where I know Neil Harris the other week even mentioned Lee Johnson in reference to the manager of the season talk.
He did. Well, due to the result that Derby pulled out of the bag against Cardiff last night, that pretty much sees the Robins done and dusted and out of the playoffs, doesn't it? I feel sad saying it, and I'm not even a Bristol City fan, but it just seems such a shame that it's come to an end in this way when we know they've been capable of better, and it just didn't happen.
It is, but one point I keep making is that, okay, you made it to the playoffs. Imagine they did. It doesn't mean you're going to go up. Only one of those four teams is.
Yeah.
I'm not confident that Bristol City could have beaten not any of the other three teams over the two legs.
It's the team that has the form going into it, isn't it? And you've got to fancy, I wouldn't rule Fulham out going automatically now. It's going to go down to the wire between Cardiff and Fulham. It's going to be thrilling. But then you've got Villa in there as well. You know, you've got to fancy Villa or Cardiff in that little pack, haven't you?
I would have fancied Bristol City against Fulham, actually.
And would you?
Yeah, because I just think those two games that I saw against Fulham, felt Bristol City probably had the better of it over both games.
Mm.
For some reason, they seemed to suit playing them. However, Villa was the opposite.
Really poor.
Yeah, I really don't feel they could have beaten Villa over two legs. So, yeah, maybe they're better off not being in it.
all hypothetical questions, because your statistician from last week, has he done you another stat for this week? What's the chances now? 1%.
Not as high as that, I don't think.
Okay, well, let's move on then from talking about the whole game, and let's talk about Bobby Reid and some news that you may or may not have about his future.
Well, I have to say this is rumours and speculation on my part. I can't verify things enough to be able to write about them. So, latest I heard, and yeah, you probably take this with a pinch of salt, is that the club won't match his wage demands that his agent is asking for at the moment. Now, I have to say that may or may not be true, and also things change very quickly. So in the summer, one of them will probably have to change position, otherwise, it's going to be
But Bobby Reid's on for the Golden Boot in the Championship. You know, there's going to be so many clubs sniffing around him.
Yeah, there definitely will be. I mean, there's interest, and certainly there's loads of scouts every week down at Bristol City from various clubs. And yeah, it's only natural that people are going to be interested in what is now, well, the player that is now the sort of most potent player in the league, if you combine both goals and assists. Vidra obviously has overtaken him now in the goal scoring chance, but he's right up there. It's going to be interest. So I think from Bobby's point of view, what I've been told by a couple of sources is, because I originally thought he might want to be loyal to Bristol City and Lee Johnson, who's helped in a way sort of create him as a striker this season. But I do see it from Bobby's point of view that he's obviously not on the best contract at the moment, because he would have signed that deal a long time ago when he wasn't a first team regular.
Yeah.
And also, I believe there was a good chance of him leaving a few years ago, possibly.
But here's the thing, he might think that he didn't have that loyalty a couple of years ago when he kept getting loaned out, you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's only this season that he's been a first team regular. What about all the years before? So how far does that loyalty extend? 25, I think. So he's not so young, really. But some people point this out as well.
People think he's younger than he is because he's taken this long to sort of break into the first team.
Yeah, but I want to
He's 25.
I want to accentuate, though, that nothing is set in stone. And, for example, what happens if he picked up a really bad injury in the last game?
Yeah,
that would have a bearing. Who comes in? What offers? Is it really that big a move if he went to somewhere like Brighton or Huddersfield? He'd have to wait, or Bournemouth even. He'd have to weigh that up very carefully. Whereas Bristol City in a couple of years could be in the same sort of position as them, the way they're building.
Well, let's just say, for argument's sake, if Bobby Reid did leave, there are other strikers at the club. Matty Taylor is a very good striker. If he got first team regular football, what could he be? But look at Zizou, he scored loads of goals this season.
Absolutely. I think those two could be the main men next season if Bobby Reid did leave. Zizou, obviously another two goals at the weekend, and I tweeted out about his goal scoring record, which is...
What is it?
It's fantastic. Well, basically, he's scored, 14 goals this season in almost half the minutes of Bobby Reid.
Wow.
So I was working out if he kept that scoring rate over the season, he'd have got 24 goals by now.
Mm.
So basically next season, and I have to emphasise as well that this was one of the points Lee made to me during the week, is that he's been really impressing on the training pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And also when they do the video analysis over the season, Jeju is really one that's been standing out. So next season, they're expecting even more from him. So yeah, he is definitely a 20-goal man there. They've got straight away for next season. They've probably got the best strike partnership in the league, in my opinion, at the moment. But if the worst case happens and Reed moves on, then they've got Jeju already, who's going to be their next 20-goal a season striker.
It's really worked out for those two this season, which has been great to see. So as I saw you on Facebook this week talking about who is the bigger future, Lloyd Kelly or Zach Viner. What's your thoughts on this one?
Well, yeah, I was told recently, obviously, I think I mentioned this before, Viner was close to an under-20s call-up for England.
Mm.
Lloyd Kelly has been there and played at that level already. There was an interview at the weekend with him discussing that, actually. And, yeah, Lloyd Kelly, for me, is just absolutely top class.
Harshly dropped at the weekend, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a lot to learn going backwards defensively, and he was given a rough ride by Traore, but There's plenty of players who've suffered at the hands of the Middlesbrough winger, so not too much to worry about there. And I actually thought, in fact, he started off that game up at the Riverside really well and was on top of that duel. Maybe later on, Traore got the better of it. But, certainly going forward, he just breezed past players.
He just makes it look so effortless, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got a really good cross on him. I think, he's got to play more often. I've said this a few times. I would love to see Bristol City play three at the back because I think they've got several players it could make the most of. Kelly is one, and Viner would come into that system.
Here's a wild sort of thought: if Joe Bryan stays down, could you ever see Joe Bryan progressing forward like Ryan Sessegnon, a lot younger than Joe Bryan, but the way he's progressed from left back to wing forward, is that something that someone like Joe Bryan could do? Because you've got Lloyd Kelly in his position, and where do you put Joe Bryan? He's too good to leave out.
Definitely. My thinking is, if they tried three at the back, you'd have Flinty or Baker in the middle there as the sort of the guy winning all the headers, and then they've got a plethora of guys who seem to be really good sort of half between fullbacks and centre-backs.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
Bailey Wright is maybe not quite big enough for me to be a regular centre-back, but
could be one of three.
He's played really well on the right at right back this season, but also plays in a back three for Australia. Also, Magnussen is another one who fits into that role. Kelly fits into that role. Viner fits into that role. Guys who maybe aren't going to dominate enough to be in a back two, but in a back three, it would maybe bring more out of them. So, in that situation, you could also play Bryan at left wing back. But anyway, hey.
Well, over summer, we'll be obviously previewing next season. We're going to take a little bit of a break, which we'll tell you more about just for a week or two. And that will be it, because we've got so much to look forward to next season, which I think Gregor and I are starting to look at already now, because I think we've sort of resigned ourselves to this season being what it is and being done. But there's still a couple of games to go. And Jamie McAllister has been talking to you this morning, Gregor, about the Nottingham Forest game.
As you said there, we're going to have a game to win, and the next one's the most important, against Forest. And that's the 3 points that we need to win on Saturday, so we've fully focused on Forest this week. Mm. Don't speak about the next game until this game's finished, so we've got to take care of our business and hope, as I say, other teams do, do us a favour.
So, interesting to hear Jamie McAllister's thoughts on Lee Tomlin, such a talented player.
No, he's a good player and a good Forest team. We're all good players, so we know his strengths, we know his weaknesses. As we do most of the players, and all the players in the Forest team, so we know what we need to do to cause him problems, and we'll do our best on Saturday, don't we?
Played so well at midweek as well. I just have to say, right, Lee Tomlin's record is a nice man to speak to, because I've spoken to him a few times, known to have a catch-up in the tunnel with.
That's really interesting, actually, to hear that. Because I think fans probably assume the worst sometimes when a player leaves the club, and it may not be like, obviously there's a lot of this stuff about Tomlin not fitting in and being a bad apple. I personally don't think that is the case. I think too much is made of those situations sometimes, and maybe just a player doesn't fit in, they've got personal reasons or whatever, and they have to move on.
I think his family is sort of from around Midlands way and things like that, and around Nottingham, and maybe his kids are up there. But for him sort of being back up there and things are starting to click a bit now, he seems to have, though, one or two games a season where he is the star man. So for him, it's about doing that consistently. What sort of reception do you think he'll get from the Bristol City away fans at the weekend?
Mixed, maybe. Mixed at best, because obviously he didn't get the best reception back at Ashton Gate when Cardiff came over November. So, yeah, interesting one. He's back in form,
isn't
he? He
spoke to me about that, and I'm not going to tell you what he said on here, because it's not fair, because it was a personal conversation. But it was not at all derogatory towards Bristol City fans at all. But it just showed that he is a human being. He's just like you and me. He has feelings. You know, imagine how you would feel if you were going to step out in front of all those fans and you were nervous about the reception you're going to get. That's what I'll say about that, because I don't want to sort of give too much of a private conversation away.
Yeah, I think that's a great message, because, yeah, a lot of fans forget this as well.
Footballers are humans. Yeah, I know they're very lucky, and I know a lot of them are paid well, but they are people at the end of the day. Finally, Lewis Carey, you caught up with him recently.
Yes, that was fantastic. A couple of weeks ago at Ashton Gate, he was down and managed to ask him a couple of questions about how that team of Gary Johnson's would compare to Lee Johnson's of now, and also what Lewis thinks of talisman Aidan Flint, who obviously plays in a similar position to himself. Obviously, two very different players, but just asked him about how the two compare.
The biggest thing for me looking back was that we had got promoted the year before, and the manager then added four or five players that had played in the Championship, that had been around the Championship, that knew the Championship, that really pushed us forward, like Marvin Elliott and Darren Byfield and Michael McIndoe. You know, there's three or four signings, but it was a follow on from the from promotion. And with it being the first year back in the Championship after 9 years, the buzz and the atmosphere week in, week out in the stadium was incredible. It was incredible. Like, you know, you want to say it now, you've got a smile on your face, because whether it was because it was new, I don't know. Whether it's the name of the teams, I'd imagine there's a little bit of everything. But the atmosphere at each game, and it just drove us through. And I think not getting beat in our first four or five games starts it. Builds a confidence, builds a belief, and like I said, with it snowballing from the promotion the year before, it just steamrolled in the confidence we gained from it. You know, the first 10 games and playing teams like Sheffield United and beating them live on Sky, it would just come down from the Prem and Brian Robson being the manager. You know, this was really big deals for us. So it just built a togetherness that probably, one of my only times here, was a real togetherness, and everybody was, you know, with each other on and off the pitch. Me, like myself and Flint, he was someone that I'd have probably enjoyed playing alongside, because I liked it when it was alongside people like Sean Taylor and Jamie McComb, that were the big, more dominant players. And, you know, I'd like to sort of, I was a little bit more, I'd read the game, if that makes sense, and, you know, the little man and the big man centre half. But, you know, his abilities and what he does do is he defends the box very well, and the other way always offers a threat, whether that's him directly at goal or whether that's you know, him causing confusion in the penalty boxes. And I think, you know, there's no getting away from it, that is his main strength, you know, his size and his power. But he's been great the last 3 or 4 years here, you know. Take the goals and his size away from it, you know, he's I think surprised a lot of people with his you know, with his performances in the last sort of 3 or 4 years, especially in the Championship.
Lewis Carey is a lovely man as well, isn't he? He's always a pleasure to talk to.
He is, yeah. He's at Southampton, I think, these days, helping out.
So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week for the penultimate season version of Robins on the Wire. As we look ahead to the final game of the season against Sheffield United, at one point we thought that might be the crunch game. At one point we thought that might decide the whole season. It doesn't look that way now, unless there's some sort of miracle at the weekend. So we'll be back to reflect the Forest game, look ahead to the Sheffield United game, and start reflecting on what has been an incredible season for Bristol City. So thank you for listening. If you're listening on iTunes, please rate and review us, and we'll catch you next week. Robins on the Wire.